chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope, so no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti Media Radio once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. I hope you guys are all having a good night, and I hope not too many people watching football tonight and listening in with us. I want to welcome my co host, DB Schwartz. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, doing good. Yeah, I guess whatever, this game's awful anyway, so if you're watching football and listening at the same time, we'll try to be more entertaining than the sorry-ass cheating Patriots getting beat down by the crappy Chiefs.
Also joined in the studio here by Chris McKay, San Diego activist. How you doing, man?
Not too bad. How's everybody doing?
I think we're doing kind of good here in the U.S. We're not under this Terminator situation that these unfortunate people are in the Middle East, because that's exactly what it is. It's the Terminator movie in real life in the Middle East, because now you got all these drones hunting people down, bunch of stuff being made up.
And you know what got hit yesterday? A granary, dude. What's that going to do to a place that's already food sensitive?
Oh, that's going to bring them freedom and democracy.
Right.
They need it.
Freedom seeds, right? I want to thank UCY for hosting our radio show, and make sure you guys bookmark UCY and check out the other awesome shows that are on this channel, and check back at all times. If you just bookmark the UCY homepage, you can hear all the other shows that go on, and a lot of great voices, and it's definitely an alternative to the Sean Hannity's and the Rush Limbaugh's and whatever corporate liberal establishment hack there is out there on the radio. I don't even know, because they don't play those here on the radio in San Diego. But I want to thank you guys all for supporting us. Make sure you check out our website, theantimedia.org. And we're going to go ahead and just jump right into this stuff right now. I guess top story of the day, and it's probably going to be for a couple of years, because if you watched Obama's thing on 60 Minutes, now I didn't watch the whole thing, but I did see some clips, and
it was excruciating, man. It was like watching the biggest double talk I've seen in my life. And you know what the funny thing is 2 years ago, what were we going into Syria for? Because of the rebels. Now we're going in to take Assad out. All along we were going in to take Assad out. So let's just stop this shamrocracy. We're not a democracy. We're a shamocracy. Let's just stop with it so we can figure out what we're going to do as a society.
Yeah, that'd be ideal if we could get these guys reeled in. But unfortunately, what I took away from Obama's thing on 60 Minutes is that basically he said, and let's kind of compare his words and compare that to what really happened. He said, well, we underestimated the power of ISIS, and we overestimated the willpower of the Iraqi forces and all that stuff. So basically what he really is saying is, hey, guys, I lied to you and fed you this bullshit that this is going to be an easy war. It's going to be quick and over and done with, and we're going to win it. And unfortunately, the real truth of the matter is that this is going to be an extended war, and we're probably going to have to send ground troops soon.
We'll see if it is, man, because I honestly believe that this is the last kind of shenanigans they can pull for this simple fact. ISIL, everybody in the top echelon of intelligence in the military for our own country knows that they're our own creation, funded and still funded by us in Israel, and that we're fighting ourselves, basically. We're fighting our own shadow puppet. And the military also knows that this group is very real, even though it's made up and it doesn't exist without the banking cartels. It's still very real, and it can still get into the U.S. with either Ebola martyrs or a dirty bomb or whatever you want to say. And it can still do damage enough that it would make a martial law scenario, which is probably why they were even invented. So this is a real danger, man, but we have to be vigilant because the government wants what they're going to do to happen.
Now, there is some encouraging news that I read from, I think the website's called Army Today or one of these, some military-centric news service. And they did a poll throughout active duty military, and you know what they found? 70% of active duty do not think it's a bad idea to send troops back into Iraq. So I think that is a positive development. The guys that are in the military, the guys that they're going to send off to go die, they understand that this is a flawed foreign policy, and they don't want to go fight. So hopefully we'll see some resistance from these guys. And maybe we'll see what happened in the Israeli military, where these guys just straight up said, hey, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to serve. I'm not going to spy on the Palestinians. That's what the Israeli guy said. So hopefully we see some guys in the American military step up and say, hey, I took an oath to defend the Constitution and to defend this country. Going into Iraq and Syria, it has nothing to do with defending the Constitution. In fact, it's blatantly unconstitutional what the president is doing. And secondly, it's not a threat to our shores. So, you know, hopefully these guys step up. They understand that it's wrong, but hopefully they have the willpower to actually take a stand, you know, and how great would that be?
I mean, that'd be wonderful, but I mean, the American people have to actually wake up also, because a year ago we were protesting going into Syria, and everybody said, yeah, we stopped them from going into Syria, knowing full well most people that we were still going to end up in Syria a year later. The pure economics of this country are set up to be that if we don't go to war, we are screwed economically. There are no more job creations. The only jobs that are created anymore in this country are the military industrial complex, prison industrial complex. And without those two and the new marijuana farming laws that are coming out to help save the economics, we would have already had economic collapse in this country. Obama's been in office for 6 years. We have an election coming up in less than 70 days or so. Or 60 days or so, or even less possibly. With that happening, they have to do something, or the people, when they go to the voting polls, won't vote Democrat or vote Republican, which everyone's lying to them and saying the economy's getting better.
Yeah, whoever's lying the most gets voted, you know, and I was listening to this this local guy. I went to the store real quick before the show started. I was listening to this local radio show, and this guy was making, and this is another one of these conservative hacks, and he was trying to make the point that, well, you know, people shouldn't be allowed to vote in Spanish, or the taxpayers shouldn't be financing these translation things at the booth, because it's their responsibility to learn English and become informed about voting. Well, I'm listening to this show and I'm like, dude, the people that can speak English can't vote in the right way. They're not informed as it is. The only thing that we see when it comes to this political stuff is one extreme side of a lying propaganda campaign, and from the other extreme side of a lying propaganda campaign. And people are supposed to vote based on these propaganda campaigns? No. Even well-versed people that are great in English, that went to college and got a master's degree in English, still can't vote the right way. Because all of this stuff, first of all, the politicians, the majority of them are crooked.
Well, it's legalese, dude. I mean, if you think about what Bill Cooper always used to say, which was 100 years ago, people knew the law because they knew the language. The language and the law were the same. There wasn't this legalese. There wasn't this basically this curtain that the legal community decided to drop on the rest of us peons and make it impossible not only to understand and interpret law, but let alone to represent yourself. which is where we're at now in an oligarchy of the courts as well, and there's no justice without money anymore either. So it's just a big debacle, and you can put it there as well as every other industry that there is.
I mean, here in the United States, we suppress the voting in so many ways compared to other free world countries. I mean, compared to Europe and Mexico alone, we don't have a voting day for a holiday, where those places both do. I mean, throughout all of Europe, there's National Voting Day. Down in Mexico, you have National Voting Day. And over there, they use public airways to actually talk about the issues and not use propaganda to some part. They're starting the propaganda campaign big time down in Mexico right now. But here in America, we're decreasing in voting numbers, and we're also decreasing in education. We're in the second year now in a row of declining people in college. We had almost 500,000 people from 2012 to 2013 not go to 2014. We're becoming an uneducated country. We're becoming a no middle class country, and we're becoming a third world nation without any doubt. There's no other way to describe it, and it's set up by design for that. And these wars are what they use to bankrupt us. That and the medical situation, the medical bankruptcy problems in this country. Without war, they wouldn't be able to control us, and without debt, they wouldn't be able to control us.
So. Yeah, me and DB were talking about that. We've talked about this a few times before. If you look at the turnout they got in Scotland, at least supposedly, it was something like 85% turnout. If you look at the turnout in the U.S., and we're talking about on the main election, the one for presidential election and all that stuff, 20% turnout. And then only half of those guys voted for Obama. The other half voted for Romney.
22% of the voting public that was eligible to show up showed up. And of that, Barack Obama won with 46%, which I believe puts him at somewhere only a little bit north of 10%.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And so, you know, people like to say, oh, well, democracy is the tyranny of the majority, which is kind of true. But I would actually prefer that to what we have now. What we have now is a tyranny of the minority, you know, where it's not that the majority of people are suppressing everyone else's rights. It's that there's a few people only that are suppressing everyone's rights. So only, you know, the numbers that we just talked about, maybe 10% of the voting population voted Obama into office. I mean, Obama's just one guy, and there's 535 congressmen or whatever. These select few people are throwing us into a war that is completely unconstitutional, completely illegal by constitutional means, by international means, even by the UN, which is a huge warmongering organization. It's even illegal with them. That's how bad it is what we're doing. And I wanted to go into this story about the Khorasan group, and I'm sure everyone heard about the Khorasan group the day before the bombing started, and I'm sure nobody's really heard about them since. And there's this great article that I have here from the First Look, which is Glenn Greenwald's organization. But basically, it talks about this Khorasan group. And if you think about it, the day before the bombing started is when we first ever heard about Khorasan. And basically, they said Khorasan was even more dangerous than ISIS because they were directly planning an attack on the United States, and that they were made up of a bunch of Al-Qaeda veterans, and they were led by this guy, and this person was a part of it, and all that stuff. Well, Glenn Greenwald looked a bit further into it, and unfortunately, it looks like Khorasan is either completely made up, or it's not even a legitimate organization. Like, it doesn't even have an operational organization.
They're all made up. They're all made up, so let's not pretend this one's new either. And without our funding and our arms, they don't exist anyway. So let's not pretend that this isn't a game we're playing with ourselves. That's what we're doing, man. We're circle-jerking ourselves. That's what we're doing.
It's just another way for them to use fear tactics to control the uneducated population in the most powerful country in the world with the more military than we can ever need.
So I got an excerpt here from this article from First Look, from The Intercept. And keep in mind, this is probably the biggest anti-establishment news organization out there. It's run by Glenn Greenwald, and it's got questionable funding from that guy from PayPal or whatever. But so far, I like the stuff they're putting out there. Here's an excerpt. There are serious questions about whether the Khorasan group even exists in any meaningful or identifiable manner. Aki Peretz, a CIA counterterrorism official until 2009, told Time, I'd certainly never heard of this group while working at the agency. While Obama's former U.S. ambassador to Syria, Robert Ford, said, we use the term Khorasan inside the government. We don't know where it came from. All I know is that they don't call themselves that. As The Intercept was finalizing the article, former terrorism federal prosecutor Andrew McCarthy wrote in National Review that the group was a scam. You haven't heard of the Khorasan group because there isn't one. It isn't the name the administration came up with. I'm horrible at reading this stuff tonight. It is the name the administration came up with, calculating that Khorasan had sufficient connection to jihadist lore that no one would call the president on it. So basically, this is a really long article. I can't get into the whole thing. But basically what it outlines is that the Associated Press, which in case people that are listening don't know, the Associated Press is basically the news wire service and the loudspeaker for the government. Every major media corporation, every corporate media outlet is a member of the Associated Press. And when the Associated Press breaks a story, it gets puppeted and parroted on every single media outlet that there is, whether it's Fox News, CBS, NBC, Huffington Post, all of them. They all puppet this stuff. And so the AP put out this article that was citing anonymous government sources that said, well, Khorasan, unlike ISIS, Khorasan is actually a threat to the homeland. And basically, because of the authorization of force that was done after 9/11, Obama had to have the only way Obama could legally strike Syria, at least in his mind and his lawyers' minds, was if there was a direct threat to the homeland. So what they did was just bombing ISIS in Syria would have been completely, completely illegal. But by cooking up this Khorasan group, which if you read this First Look article, you can tell that this thing is basically cooked up out of thin air. It gave them the quote-unquote legal justification to go ahead and start bombing inside of Syria. Now, unfortunately, they're bombing ghosts, right? And then all this stuff that they hit, these guys, the ISIS guys, were tipped off. And they got the hell out of there before the bombs even fell down. What, 30 ISIS guys died in that first bombing streak? 10 civilians, so you got a 25% rating. I've been looking at the tallies, and it's keeping up. About 25% of the people that we're hitting are civilians, and those are the ones that we're admitting to. And you got to keep in mind that any male within fighting age, which I think now is like between 14 and who knows how old, they consider militant. So,
it's super hypocritical that they were condemning Assad for cutting rations and trying to starve out his own population, and now we go and blow up this massive granary and refinement silo, and they're going to run out of food again, and they killed a bunch of civilians and workers. So with their so-called precision bombs, and these were not drones. These were human beings coming in with fighter jets because they don't want the stigma of the drones being put in there yet. You know, that's more for patrol. We're going in there with human beings that are going to, you know, only hit the enemy. And it's just proven false because we're doing a lot of night missions, and I don't care how good you are, you make a mistake or the missile's just not that great. I mean, even $1 million Hellfire probably can miss 5% of the time. So there's no easy way around what we're doing, which is trying to depose of a dictator again, like Iraq with Saddam, and it's going to be a mess again and make a permanent division in the Middle East. And if we're okay with that, that's fine. But then they're going to use it as an excuse for if somebody comes over here and hits us with something, well, we need to go in there now. It's a world war. Do you know what I mean? Now we need our whole army and military in there. And Russia's just, I don't think they can even accept that. I just couldn't see them allowing that.
Yeah, man. And now keep in mind that all of the rhetoric now coming from the administration and coming from official outlets are basically trying to say, you know, they're basically saying, okay, well, you know, we underestimated. Now Obama's like, well, I know I said we weren't going to put troops on the ground, but at the same time, we underestimated the problem and stuff. So the fact of the matter is that they're getting ready to lay the groundwork for a ground invasion of Iraq and Syria. And now even more frightening, and I think we all know this already, but Justin King outlined it today in an article for us on the antimedia.org. And this is also an excerpt from Obama's speech on 60, or his, you know, softball interview on 60 Minutes, where he wasn't pressed at all, where it was just basically, oh, we'll throw you a couple beach balls and you can go ahead and swing at them, knock them out of the park. And, I mean, what else do you expect from the corporate media? Anyway, on 60 Minutes, President Obama flatly stated that the U.S.'s plan for Syria does not include Assad. So, I mean, we've been saying it over and over. We've been posting articles on it over and over. The memes that we've been putting out over and over about how this is not truly about ISIS. Yes, ISIS is a threat to people in Iraq and to people in Syria. The U.S. created ISIS.
They're a threat to us, honestly. Let's not mince words. That's really what they are. They're the setup for the fall guy for an attack here. And our own intelligence knows it and is leaking it out to different sources here. But that's what they're worried about. That's what they're being propped up for. Because if we had something worse than what happened 13 years ago, something worse than that, something a lot worse than that, something that scared the crap out of people and would make them do whatever they were told to do, including martial law, then you usher in the new age, real nice and orderly-like. And that's what it's going to be about, unless we can defeat it somehow.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, how are you going to defeat the propaganda machine of the corporate government of the United States? I mean, there's no way you're going to defeat that without tearing down the state, which, I mean, I'm for completely, because it's completely corrupted. But when you have the sheeple in this country, I mean, everybody in this country is either overworked or mentally messed up. They're really, I mean, the same number of people in this country are very 1%, 2% of people that are actually strong enough and smart enough to actually even go against these people.
And yeah, it's definitely an uphill battle. But I think it's a battle that we're starting to get the upper hand on, honestly. Just seeing the growth of our network lately the growth of the anti-media, it goes to show that there's a lot of people that actually care. Now, here's the thing. Here's the big problem, and I want to know what you guys think about this. And also, if anybody wants to call in, the lines are open. You guys can call into the radio show. The number is 718-717-8296. Now, I look over at our numbers on the anti-media, and I look at our demographics and stuff, and it's clear to see that all of our users, all of the people that read our stuff and that interact with us, are all people under 40. You know, these are people that don't watch TV. These are people that are on the internet looking at news. These are people that are reading blogs and choosing what they want to look at, choosing the information that they want to consume, instead of the people that are over 50 that are exclusively on television eating up the spoon-fed news that is put out through the Associated Press and then parroted by every other outlet out there, just like this whole Coruscant thing. And this is what's great about this Glenn Greenwald article. He cites all these articles that came out the night before the bombing, and they're all hyping up this Coruscant thing. But it just goes to show, these guys will report stuff that it has zero factual basis, requires zero research, and they have zero evidence, and they're just taking the word from some anonymous government figure that was quoted, which could just be nobody, which it probably is. It just made up. And it's someone at the government just said, yeah, leak this to the Associated Press, tell them about this Coruscant group. That way no one's going to give us any shit about bombing Syria. That's exactly probably what they did, you know? And it just goes to show that if you look at the voting demographics, it's not the young people that voted. Yeah, in 2008, a bunch of young people came out to vote for Obama and stuff. But Obama lost his luster by 2012. I don't think hardly any young people came out and voted in 2012, because what were their choices? Mitt Romney, the billionaire, or Barack Obama, the warmonger? No young people are going to come out for that. The only thing young people were going to come out for was Ron Paul or Dennis Kucinich or somebody like that. That was actually speaking a real message. And because these people are so educated outside of the corporate media that they see right through Mitt Romney, they see right through Barack Obama. They see Obama talking about these wars and they understand, okay, well, apparently the role of the government isn't to keep us safe and keep us at peace. It's to start wars, because that's what they do now. Look at John Kerry. John Kerry is our chief diplomat. He's supposed to be the guy that doesn't make war. He's supposed to be the guy that makes peace.
Yeah.
Why is he the biggest propagandist for war in the whole country? I mean, the country is running completely backwards, and it's just kind of symbolic of the overall oligarchy that we're kind of stuck with and that we're living in right now. And it's not going to change by voting, because the young people that actually get shit don't vote. And the old people that watch CBS and Fox News and MSNBC, those are the guys that vote. And there's not much we can do to change that, because being that the young people are excluded from the politics, that their voices aren't heard in the government, what in the hell is going to make them want to vote? I mean, a bunch of people rallied around Ron Paul. What happened? They did electoral fraud and they kicked him out of the race. I mean, this is what they've given us. They've given us not many options to work with. And I agree with you, Chris. The state needs to be torn down. I don't want to speculate on how to go about doing that. I obviously don't advocate violence. I'm a believer in creating solutions where people finally, we create solutions that are so good that people say, you know what? Yeah, you're right. We don't need the cops. We can take care of the policing at the community level by community members. We can get rid of cops.
Yes, we can. We can go back to militias and we can fund them at a community level. I mean, Nick, you could have the Chula Vista militia / watch. What the police used to do before the police department were changed, they were the city watch. There were not any kind of policing needed until high rises were built and there was infrastructure people might burn down when they realized how much the ruling class stiffs them. That's why the police departments were created, pure and simple. So we really, we got to get back to that community level, man.
Yeah, I mean, the police departments, the sheriffs were created in this country in 1842, and it was to protect the white property owners that were protected by the Constitution of the United States, not anybody else. That was the sole purpose of police force being invented, yes. But that alone, I mean, you look at the demographic of, I'm looking at a chart right now. It shows how 55 and older are always going to be much higher of a number in the United States than 40 to 54 and 25 to 39 and 18 to 25 for the voting age. And the voting age is set up that way. The older people, they're happy. They're content with voting for the lesser of two evil. So if you have a larger number population of people who have given up on the democratic process in the United States and just go there to check their box because that's their patriotic duty, and the rest of the people are still believing in it and are actually trying to do their research and get, by the time they get to the age of 55 and 100, they've either given up or they've said, well, it's unwinnable and they just don't vote. So that's the main way of rule, is by getting the people, the age. I didn't know that until I looked at this chart, actually, the separation and how it just gets more and more intense by the years it goes by. I mean, the number, there's going to be, by 2050, the number of people 55 to 100 is going to be almost three times that of people that are all the other ages combined.
Yeah, and now the thing that really sucks, the most horrible part, is that we have to remember who actually... Now, we know who gets us into wars, right? We know it's politicians, old white guys that get us into wars, right? We know that much.
You can go deeper.
But we ask, who fights the wars? Well, it's the young guys. It's the guys that are my age, the guys that are between 18 and 35. Those are the guys that have to go out there and die for these politicians and these idiotic moves that they're doing, which, unfortunately, for the most part, is geopolitics and a bottom line for corporations. You know, so it's a bunch of old guys that say, okay, well, we're going to go ahead and do this. We're going to do that. We're going to close down the federal parks because we don't have money. But then a year later, we're going to go ahead and just start bombing Iraq again and then go bomb Syria. I mean, did you guys see that report about that they find on that first run of the F-22? You know, that fighter jet that they spent billions in fact, I think it was almost $1 trillion. They spent developing this F-22 stealth jet. Did you see the report about how much it cost to do that first run? It was almost $100 million to send this jet on one bombing run. $100 million. And they can do that, but they're going to close our federal parks. They're going to make people pay extreme interest rates for college loans. I mean, this is insanity.
You know, I don't find that surprising at all, because when they tallied up how much jet fuel Air Force One has used in the last, 6 years? It was at $3 billion of jet fuel. That's unbelievable to me.
That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, you have people like, in Congress, you have people like Scott Peters here in San Diego area, who's a congressman, who's also on the Arms Committee. And 2 years ago, he was negotiating a deal for a corporation here in San Diego to purchase, to make more drones, and he invested in their stock. When that went through and they got the bid for to make some more drones, he sold their stock. He made $500,000 by doing that. They got insider trading. It's worth money for them to go to war. It's not worth anything for us to go to war, but they're the ones making the rules and the decisions. So, in order to beat that, the only thing you can do is get everybody, vote out the incumbent, do something, get rid of everybody. I mean, vote none of the above, something, but voting, in my opinion, doesn't work, so.
Yeah, man, and people, I think people get that, that's why people are so disenfranchised.
Yeah, yeah, they've given up.
And, these politicians, just like you just said, they get away with insider trading. We know Nancy Pelosi was doing it. We know most people in Congress are doing it. In fact, it's basically illegal. Yet if we get caught doing it, if anybody, Martha Stewart went to jail for that shit, it's do as I say, not as I do. So obviously that guy that you were just talking about, what was his name?
Scott Peters.
Scott Peters. If you're in San Diego, don't vote for this idiot. I know.
Well, he's being ran against by Carl DeMaio.
Oh, so another corporatist.
Yeah, you're screwed either way.
Yeah, so either way, lesser of two evils, they're both actually extremely evil.
Vote Alex Fidel for city mayor and see what happens.
Well, see, about 4 years ago, I believe it is, we actually made a law that made it so that insider trading by Congress was illegal. Well, in 2013, they repealed that law. Congress repealed that law and made it legal again for them to actually be able to do insider trading. It's legal for them to actually do. The people already spoke and said make it illegal. We did it, and they've told us pretty much go fuck ourselves.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
And here's the thing that really gets me, man, and this is what one thing I rail about in most of my – anytime I give a speech, I normally mention this. We get thrown in jail in certain states like Texas. Here in California, okay, we've laxed it up a bit. In Texas, you get caught smoking a joint on the street, you're in jail, buddy. You're done. Yeah. Okay, and that, if you look at the Constitution – The first constitution was written on hemp, okay? So there is nothing in the Constitution, which is supposed to be the law of the land, that says anything about regulating these kind of substances. Even cocaine, even meth, even acid, any of that stuff. The government doesn't actually have a legitimate authority to regulate that stuff.
No,
they don't.
Not, yeah.
But at the same time, even though these laws have who knows how many millions of people in prison that are unconstitutional laws and there's no authority to enforce, there's still people losing their life and ruining families, ruining lives over this stuff. Yet Obama can sit there and break the supreme rule of the land, which is the Constitution, and go ahead and just wage a war unconstitutionally without a declaration of war from the Congress, which is how it's supposed to happen. And what happens to him? He gets praised. He gets praised. See, everyone loves him except for Fox News, which Fox News wouldn't care. If it was Bush, they wouldn't give a damn. So Fox News' opposition to anything is completely superficial. In fact, when it came to hyping up ISIS and hyping up Khorasan, they were a complete participating party in this thing. They don't. When it comes to war, Fox News is nonpartisan. They'll join a war. They don't care. You know, as long as it's a war, they love it. You know, but these guys get away with breaking the Constitution, breaking the laws that hurt millions of people, that rob people of billions of dollars, going to war that bankrupt future generations, and they get nothing but Secret Service. They get lifetime health care, they get pensions, they get Secret Service for life and all this crap. And what do we get for walking down the street smoking a joint in Texas? You get thrown in prison. You get not prison, but jail. You know, there's a kid that is facing 30 years in jail for having 2 pounds worth of pot brownies, of marijuana brownies. He's facing 30 years in prison for having brownies with marijuana in them. And these politicians send our kids off to die by the thousands. They set us up with all of this blowback. They set us up for future terror attacks because the people in the Middle East are so tired of our economic imperialism, and these guys get to walk free. All of these guys need to get taken to prison and tried to the fullest extent of the Constitution, even if it means a death sentence. I don't care. These guys need to face the reality of what everyone else faces, and they need to stop being above the law. And until any of that happens, then the electoral process in the United States, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, it's all a farce.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you have people like U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, who's resigning now, who came out during the Ferguson and said he's the U.S. Attorney General, but he's also a black man. Well, if he's actually that, then how come he's not arresting Obama? That's his job. Because Obama appoints him. Obama's rubbed his back and patted his hand with a nice little bonus here, bonus there. And I don't care what he says to the people on TV. He's a sold-out man that sold his soul to the American corporations, to the military-industrial complex, to the prison-industrial complex, because there's no U.S. Attorney General that has had any credibility in my lifetime. Because it's just like I don't see a police officer arresting a police officer when they break the law. I don't see the U.S. Attorney General or any district attorney anywhere arresting politicians when they break the law. It has to be exposed by somebody else, and then they do something.
Yeah, we have a great article up on the antimedia.org, actually, by Carrie Wedler, which is one of our new journalists, about Holder. And yeah, he did have a few accomplishments, but he turned a blind eye when it came to civil liberties, when it came to the NSA, when it came to the Department of Homeland Security, when it came to militarizing the police, when it came to busting up marijuana dispensaries, and frankly, when it came to the oppression of minorities in this country, he didn't step up until he was ready to resign. He didn't do nothing for the most part the whole time he was in office.
I'd love to be able to ask Martin Luther King if he thinks he's a black man, if Eric Holder is a black man.
And, you know, Eric Holder, for what he did with Fast and the Furious, he should be in prison as well. Mm-hmm. He helped arm 100% cartels. Yeah. He helped arm Mexican drug cartels. He was trafficking weapons of these guys. And he set up a system where one cartel would get immunity from the U.S. government in exchange, supposedly, for information on another cartel.
Remember, the U.S. went in and took out the head running cartel and then worked with the next in line to actually – that's the cartel that he did the drug running with. They took out the Felix cartel in Mexico, and then they went down and told this cartel, you guys are going to be the next leader, and we're going to give you the guns to do it. And, yeah, totally should be in prison.
Yeah, I mean, that is complete – treason, and then a lot of those guns came back across the border and killed Americans too. They even killed a cop or something, I think. Holder, he's resigning, and he deserves to go straight to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200,000 for the rest of your life, because that's probably what he's going to do.
Or more.
That's where he should go, is straight to prison, but he's not. And it's a symptom of the overall system. And who they have, there's chatter now that Janet Napolitano is going to replace him. Janet Napolitano, the former head of the DHS.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about the U.S. spy chief, basically, more or less, outside of the CIA, that made a living of abusing our rights and abusing our civil liberties. Now she's going to be in charge of running the civil rights of the country? No, that's horrible. That's a horrible idea. But it's being talked about in liberal establishment circles. And that would be a horrible thing, because we can't look past, okay, yeah, she's a woman, and yeah, good. And just like Eric Holder is a black man, that's good as well. But we can't look past their character. These are people that are evil people. Doesn't matter who they are. They're bad people. They've done horrible things. And they need to be treated like anyone else who has done things that are against the Constitution. They go to prison.
And Holder's gone because he refused to prosecute people. He refused to make patsies out of people. Say what you want about him, he didn't go after the banking system.
Exactly.
And it actually, in a way, made it worse for the elites. And I'll tell you why. Nobody has paid yet. And the things have been getting worse and worse. And they're at the point now where the guys in the military who are high up, I'm talking about generals, that are beyond the scope even of the banksters, are really getting worried, man, because what's going to happen when we don't have a cash system and a monetary system and an economy that functions with 300 million people plus? They're going to be asked to do heinous things to their own citizens, and they're not going to do it.
No, they're not going to do it, but you know who will and won't say anything about it? The drones. The drones have no conscience, and that's why we talk about that so much on this show, because like we opened up the show with, the people in the Middle East are facing a real-life Terminator situation, just like the movie. There are literally drones hunting these people down, looking at them every hour of the day, and prying into their privacy and stuff. And it's being done on a limited scale here right now. But in the situation in the future, we talk about militarization of the police. We talk about the National Guard, Posse Comitatus, all that stuff. That's all fine and dandy, because these people, at the end of the day, they're still human beings, and they're still Americans, and they still have a conscience for the most part. A lot of these guys are brainwashed. A lot of these guys will follow orders. But we talked about that poll at the beginning of the show. 70% of the guys in the military understand that our foreign policy is flawed. And I think these guys, and we talked about it, what, last week, about how many guys in the military were giving money to Ron Paul. Ron Paul raised more money out of any candidate in 2012 from the military because it was basically a sign showing us, hey, the guys in the military understand that our foreign policy is messed up. So Obama continues to drone on with this message, even though I don't believe him, that there's going to be no boots on the ground. Well, there sure as hell is going to be a lot of drones on the ground. And it's only a matter of time, just like all the old weaponry from the military came back and militarized the police. What the hell do you think they're going to do with all these drones? They're going to be used domestically. And that is, to me, the biggest threat to our lives and our freedom and our civil liberties. That is the biggest threat, is the drones, because the drones have no conscience. The drones don't care if they kill a guy, they kill a family. The drones don't give a damn. All they do is follow orders. There's no changing that unless they hack them, unless you find someone that's good enough to hack these drones.
But Nick, that's why I'm not so worried, man, about a dystopian future of drones, because drones have already been shown to be hackable by a lot lesser technologically savvy countries, and they've been able to do it, dude. It's not as tough as you'd think. In fact, it's not even tough enough for us to put our faith in it, so much so that we just released a $3.5 billion destroyer that is controlled by human beings with the infamous rail guns on them, because drones would work great in a first wave, and then they'd get hacked and they'd be done. That'd be it. But you know what they're great for, Nick? They are great for what you're saying. Keeping a population under control until we decide to hack them and we turn them back on them. So they know they're not going to be able to use them quite the same way. I'm not too worried about it. And then what they do is they provide the open marketplace for us. We can get drones now. We can put a server up on a drone, put solar panels on top of it, and it'll run for 5 years, and they can never shut our website off.
Yeah, a few of my friends have drones now. My buddy Jason Basler, that runs the freethoughtproject.com, that you probably see on Cop Block all the time, he got a drone, and they went and actually flew it over a police station. The police didn't really like it very much, but they did it, and they got away with it.
Well, yeah, they have the drones now that you can actually buy for your smartphone. And I think anybody that has a smartphone should have their own personal drone. And every day they should take a drone for a walk and videotape as many people as they can. And, I mean, try to really humiliate these people. Start videotaping them and making sure that they can see what they look like. I mean, because unless the people really get pissed off about being droned, we have drones every day. I've watched drones take off in San Diego out on the back roads here in the middle of the night. I mean, we're droned all the time here in San Diego. And every major city has been given drones by DHS. The only place I know that I've seen them stop being used is up in Seattle.
I don't know if you noticed the other day up here on the 5 freeway, just right out, just south of San Diego here, above the shipyard where they build all the Navy ships, there was a blimp drone
the
up there.
White
did you see
drone.
That?
Yes,
yeah,
did.
There was a
yeah.
white blimp drone. They were flying over the Navy shipyards over here in San Diego, and I'm pretty sure they were doing surveillance, quote unquote, to protect us from Coruscant, which is a made-up group.
See, I thought it was a personal blimp, actually, when I saw it.
No, I thought so, too. But then when I got close, I looked and I realized it was directly over the shipyards. And I know they're not going to allow a personal blimp to fly over those shipyards.
Right.
You know, and that it was a Navy surveillance drone. That's what it was. You know, and they're flying them now openly here in San Diego. In fact, one just crashed off the border a few months ago off the coast here that they say was patrolling the border. We all know that's not true, but these drones are being turned against us, and it's a scary thought. Now, back to Obama's speech here on 60 Minutes. Basically what he said is, we are not going to stabilize Syria under the rule of Assad. Obviously, buddy. I mean, you're going to destabilize Syria to the brink of utter collapse. I mean, it's already pretty much there. And striking grain, grain silos is not going to help stabilize Syria, obviously. But, you know, we've speculated about it a long time, and obviously last year they wanted to overthrow Assad. This year they want to overthrow Assad, but this year they've realized, okay, we can't go about it. The American public is tired of regime change, especially now after what happened in Libya, after we deposed Gaddafi, and now look at Libya. We had our embassy attacked, our ambassador killed, Libya is a failed state. The airport got taken over. The embassy got pulled out. All of the UN personnel are pulled out of Libya now because it's a failed state. Now it's a war zone that's being jockeyed by a bunch of militias. Now, do they have a bunch of weapons left? Not as many, because we funneled all their weapons out of there and shoved them into Syria and gave them to ISIS a year ago when we were funding ISIS to overthrow Assad. Yeah, I know it sounds crazy, but this is the stuff that our government does. And they think that this stuff is working. They think it's a good idea. Well, it is working for them, because guess who's making a bunch of money off of this? The oil companies, the military contracting companies, the politicians that are getting their pockets lined by the contracting companies. But guess who's getting bankrupted? You and me. We're all getting bankrupted, all because we got a petrodollar system, all because we went bankrupt because we tried to fight in Vietnam when we shouldn't have been. And they put themselves in this situation now where, in order to protect the petrodollar, you got to go to war. And that's what these guys are doing, because if they don't protect the petrodollar, then the 1% falls down to the bottom with the rest of us.
Well, that's their excuse, though, Nick, because anybody who's anybody, you don't have to be 1%er. If you have a financial advisor at all, they're already divesting you out of the dollar into tangible assets, because they're not stupid. Even if you have somebody you hire at a mall, they know better than to keep it in any kind of a currency at all, or anything that would be tied to a currency. It's going to have to be an asset. They're going to put you into bonds, or put you into even water. I mean, Nestle's exploding right now, and nobody's going to stop them. Nobody's going to stop Nestle from taking all the groundwater. Who's going to do that in time? They're going to drain it out before any lawsuit can even get going. So there's things you can put your money into now, and the people that have even a little money on a global scale are already doing that. The thing is, the working people, the blue-collar people, the regular people, they're going to be held left holding a bag with zero in it, and they're going to have to come begging to the government. And what will that do? Will allow them to do anything they want.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you look at it in a way of, if you look back at 9/11, everybody was all scared. You know, where's the next terrorist plot going to hit? What was the government's answer? Well, it was to start up two or three wars, and it was to give you the Patriot Act, which is supposed to make you safe. Now, unfortunately, the Patriot Act did anything but make us safe. It just undermined our freedom and stuff. Obviously, they can't stop an attack if these idiots in the Boston bombing were able to pull that off. And I know a lot of people question that stuff, but let's take it at face value, and let's say that the official story is true. Well, even at that value, then all of our security apparatus is a complete failure. The NSA is a failure. The FBI is a failure. The FBI got tipped off on these guys. The FBI's had him in custody and questioned this guy, and they let him off. The CIA failed. The DHS failed. The foreign policy failed. Everything failed. The Patriot Act didn't do a damn thing to protect us. The National Defense Authorization Act didn't do a damn thing to protect us. All it did was undermine our freedom. The only way our government could legitimately protect us right now would be to start pulling our troops out of these countries overseas where the people absolutely hate us. And they don't hate us for our freedom. That's obvious, because we hardly have any left. What they hate us for is our corporate imperialism. I mean, it's plain to see. Yeah, there's a geopolitical chessboard behind the scenes between Russia, China, and the U.S. Okay, I get that. But the simple fact of the matter is that geopolitical chessboard is causing a bunch of blowback that is, by the day, undermining our freedom, undermining our safety, undermining our security, and increasing the level of threat to us, not only by terrorists coming back for blowback, but just by bankrupting the country. Our kids have no security, because when they get old, even when I'm of age, I know I'm not going to get any Social Security. I know damn well, because that program's already bankrupt, you know. So I have no expectation of getting that. That's why I plan on doing other things, and hopefully when I am of age to retire, if I survive that long, then I'll be able to do that without relying on the government, because I know damn well that every program that the government has been in since what was it, the New Deal and all that stuff. All of those programs are done. They're all bankrupt. They all ended after Nixon closed the gold window and bankrupted the country when he went into Vietnam because of the wars. So these wars undermine not only our physical safety because of blowback and terrorists coming back to hit us, and then these extreme Islamic groups are able to recruit people within the country so easy, because the people even within the country are feeling helpless. Even the regular Muslim guys in the country are starting to feel the weight of this crappy economy, this student debt, all these student loans. I mean, the two guys that hit the Boston bombing, they were college kids, you know, they had previously gone to college or were still in college or whatever. They're able to recruit because of all this blowback. And the people within the country, or the Muslim people within the country, are able to look and say, oh, damn, the U.S. is doing horrible things overseas. And every time they see that is another chance for them to move closer and closer to a homegrown attack. And it's real. It could be real. Do I think there are false flags that are fake? Yeah. But could there be a real homegrown terrorist attack? Of course. And our foreign policy every single day increases the odds, increases the probability that someone that you know, or maybe even you, are going to get hit in a real homegrown terrorist attack because of what our government is doing overseas.
Oh, yeah, we are terrorists. The United States of America, any American citizen, if you don't think you're a terrorist, I guess you haven't talked to anybody outside the country. But everybody in the world knows we're a terrorist. I mean, we sit here and let our government drop drone missiles on innocent people. And also, American citizens have been killed by drones over in foreign countries.
Yeah, 16-year-old kid.
Yeah, we are terrorists. Until we stand up and stop the terrorist actions of our own government, then we're no better than any other terrorist organization. We are Al-Qaeda, we are ISIS, and we are Khorasan.
And think about this. When we got hit on 9/11, what was every American's first instinct? Let's get these mother effers back.
Yeah.
So what do you think happens when we do a 9/11 in another country?
They think.
What do you think those people think? I mean, it's you don't even have to be smart to get this. But the people, if you look back at the 2012 Republican presidential debates, they act like, oh, blowback? You're a conspiracy theorist. You're a fringe. You're unelectable. You can't talk about blowback, even though it's perfectly logical. And even though it's illogical to think, yeah, they just hate us for our freedom, our bombing of their neighborhoods, and yeah, we kill the guy's wife, family, children. No, that won't radicalize anybody. That wouldn't make them want to come back and hit us. They hate us for our freedom. We're the freest country in the world. That's what these dudes are
feeding us. We blew them
up
for their freedom. By blowing them up, we made them free.
Freedom from a world dominated by an American hegemony. Yeah, that's true in a way.
You know, that made a lot of sense in 2001 prior to the internet and prior to any kind of common sense oozing out of anybody because, let's face it, we had the dumbest generation after the greatest generation, the most brainwashed generation of all time, the one that basically got the spoils of the labor of the one that pretty much took everything from the rest of the world. And then now as their children, that's most of us, and then their children's children, which is the new generation coming up, we really owe it to the rest of the world to fix what they created. They created this colossus. Their tax dollars created the strongest, most dangerous force in the world that we've ever seen, and there's no one left to fight, so that's why we have ISIS.
Yeah, nice. And think of it. When did we first start bombing in Iraq? Well, we had CIA workings in Iraq dating back to the 50s. We helped Saddam Hussein come into power, and we propped up Saddam Hussein, and this is back in the 80s, 70s and 80s, and then we bombed them in 91, and then we bombed them in 2003. We've been bombing them ever since. We had a no-fly zone prior to that. It's estimated that we killed 500,000 Iraqi children indirectly or directly through our policies, whether it be through sanctions, no-fly zones, or actual bombs. 500,000 children. You think that's not going to create blowback? You think that's not going to create a bunch of people in Iraq that hate our guts? If you think that, then you probably voted for Michelle Bachmann in the primaries or Mitt Romney, whatever. I mean, this is what these guys are trying to feed us. And the 2012 Republican debate was nothing but a gigantic fear-mongering, war-mongering campaign by the establishment media, the establishment political parties, and their handlers, which are the corporations that make a shit ton of money off of all this crappy policy and keeping us afraid and keeping us divided and keeping us all these things. Because if the people ever finally divided, and I truly think that's why Martin Luther King got taken out, was because he was blurring the lines. He was bringing people together, and that's why he really became a threat. And that's what these guys do. They just keep us divided, keep us split apart, fighting each other over these petty issues that should not be involved in government at all, like gay marriage. That should not even be in the government. The government should not have anything to do with marriage. But they use these kind of topics And they use their media where they play the two sides of the coin, where you got Fox News on the right and all the other guys on the left, and they play everybody against each other, and everybody's neutralized by these things like gay marriage, when in reality, it's none of the government's damn business about who you marry or anything like that. That should be left up to the culture and whatever, you know, whether it's culturally acceptable or not, that should be up to the culture and up to the people, not the government. But they use these kind of topics to keep us all split apart. Yeah. And it's all superficial stuff. But when it comes to starting a war with Syria or start bombing in Syria, well, guess what? Everybody was in unison. Everybody was bipartisan. Everybody in the Congress wanted to support this thing. We saw that in the vote. We saw the vote. The House was a bigger margin than the Senate. There was like 150 guys in the Congress that voted against it. But in the Senate, it was a blowout. I mean, it was completely bipartisan. So when it comes down to this kind of stuff, the stuff that really matters, the stuff that the government should actually be dealing with, it's just theater, man. It's like, okay, yeah, we all agree that we need to go spend billions of dollars and fight wars, but we can't agree to keep the public parks open, or we can't agree to give people food stamps or anything like that, or to pay for education. Now, I'm not a huge fan of government education, none of that stuff. But if we're going to spend money, we got to spend it on the stuff that is actually going to benefit people, not the stuff that's going to be robbing us behind. And that's what we're paying for right now.
We need to absolve the Department of Education because it's just indoctrination at this point. And we can let cities and states decide how they're going to educate their pupils based on people we vote in, not this oligarchy again that's destroying our country. But really where we need to funnel the money is just our infrastructure, man. Look at our roads. Look at our bridges. We still have no public transportation options when you're trying to go city to city. And in where we live, we can't get around at all without a car. So what's going to happen if gas doubles or triples? What if we even paid what Europe paid? We'd be screwed. So we got to do all these kind of things and divert our money away from war, because war is destroying the rest of the world. We really, really need to fix our country.
It's destroying the rest of the world, and it's destroying us.
Well, I mean, we don't want to fix it. The people in power don't want to fix it. The more that they have it become a third world country, in the long run, they can make the North American dollar. They can combine the Mexican dollar and the Canadian dollar to make the one North American dollar for better buying power for them, just like Europe did. And we see how well that worked out for them.
Yeah, central banking, I mean, it comes down to that, I think, behind the whole scheme of things. If you look, and there was a big report, and we're working on a story on the anti-media, we haven't put it out yet, but a big report came out about the New York Fed. And you got to keep in mind, the New York Fed is probably the most powerful one, because that's the one that presides over Wall Street and stuff. And there was a woman, Carmen Segarra, I believe her name was, that was working at the Fed. And she was in charge of keeping Goldman Sachs regulated and up to, you know, within the law. And that's what her job was. And now she went in there and she started finding a bunch of flaws in the way they were doing things. And she made a report about it. That was her job to do. And after she made this report, the people at the Fed were like, oh no, you know, you gotta amend this report and say that Goldman Sachs is within the law. You know, and these people at the Fed who are supposed to be in charge of keeping these guys honest are actually pressuring their employees to make them bend the rules. And now she sensed that something was gonna happen because she wasn't compromising on her ethics. And she started recording the interactions at the Fed and at Goldman Sachs. And sure enough, she got like 48 hours worth of recordings. And she came out, and she blew the whistle. She filed a whistleblower protection, but the courts threw it out. She's appealing it. But the stuff that came out is pretty telling. And it shows the cozy relationship. In fact, there's something like 40 former Federal Reserve employees that now work at Goldman Sachs. 40 employees from the Fed that now work at Goldman Sachs. So it kind of shows this relationship that's so close. They work together. The Fed is owned by the banks. Sure. The banks are in charge of the Fed. The banks are in charge of all of this stuff. You know, and we got to keep in mind that is a major source of the root of our problem. And something that we should always talk about. And especially now that the story is going kind of viral, this is a great time to talk about the Fed, raise awareness about the Federal Reserve. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll catch you on Wednesday.